This is a special presentation from Carolina Catholic Radio Charlotte, 1270 AM, and Carolina Catholic Media. From the 2023 Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas, its author, entrepreneur, and special speaker, Jonathan Fanning.
Our next speaker is Jonathan Fanning. He is the author of several books, including Who Are You Becoming? I Once Was Lost, Creativity Unleashed, and, nearing completion, God, I Have a Few Questions.
Yeah, I do too. That might be a fun book.
He's been coaching leaders from Fortune 500 executives to sole proprietors for over two decades. If you are familiar with TED Talks, Jonathan was voted the best speaker at a TEDx conference.
What was that, 2016? I read in your bio?
He has also built several successful businesses, including a national children's fitness franchise, a leadership consulting company, and Entrepreneur Advantage, which helps teach young people the experience of business startup and ownership. He has inspired and challenged audiences with his message in 49 states and on three continents.
What, not Alaska?
Okay. Jonathan lives in New York, and with his amazing wife and two angelic teenage daughters.
Gentlemen, it is possible to have an angelic teenage daughter.
I had one. Please help me welcome Jonathan Fanning.
All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Fossey and I think it was Tuscany. Love the quote, but it sounds great in and out. Should I move to this one, or are we good?
I don't stand still well. I get in trouble for a lot of things at home, and standing still is not one of them. Sicci Dio voleva che tu fossi, incenderai il mondo. I have no idea what it means. I have no idea, but it sounds great, doesn't it? So I was hoping one of you might. I figured they say North Carolina is the home of wisdom. I mean, I've been wrong before. All right, we'll come back to that, maybe. When I was 18 years old, I thought I knew everything. How many of you know someone who thinks they know everything? How many of you? Show of hands. How many of you? Okay. How many of you that you invited that person to come to the conference with you? How many of you, they're sitting close to... So when I was 18, I thought I knew everything. And all of us have somebody in our lives like that. Yeah, you have somebody in your life like that? I challenge you to write this down. I love this quote. Isaac Asimov said it. He said, people who think they know everything are a great annoyance to those of us who actually do. So I'm 18 years old, and I think I know everything. And by the way, I need to pause for a second. I need at least two people, probably in the front row. Maybe my friend Joe can help. But to keep notes on things that I need to bring up in confession afterwards. Because I get to speak all over the world, and only about 25% of my speaking is in churches. And I always say something that I probably shouldn't, you know, or I use a story. Like I was speaking in a church in San Francisco, and... I didn't want to speak in the church because it was a cathedral. I mean, it was like the St. Patrick's Cathedral of San Francisco, which sounds like an oxymoron. But it happened to be the cathedral that Mother Teresa spoke at in the early 1980s for St. Francis's 800th birthday. You know, and I'm thinking, like, where did she stand? Because I'm not going near there. I actually asked the people putting on the event. We had about 1,000 people at the conference, and I said, "Can we do it in the parking lot? Because I can't speak." So I'm 18 years old. I think I know everything, right? I had a professor. I'm studying mechanical engineering, and I had a professor that gave us an assignment, and he said, "You have 6 weeks to do the assignment." How many of you realize if you know everything and you have 6 weeks to do something? The first two or three weeks, what do you do? Nothing, okay. What do you do week four and five? What was that?
Worry, no.
I mean, not me at 18, but week five, week six, I mean, the morning of the assignment. Here was the assignment. The assignment was we're gonna understand flight,
Lyft, Bernoulli, you know, how things fly. And we had this one-page sheet that said what you could do, but you had to build an aircraft. And the day of the assignment, the day it was due, we were going to go on the roof of a three-story building, about where the cross is up there, maybe, in the stained glass window. And we're going to fly our aircraft. And you get an A if it's in the air for 15 seconds, 14 seconds B, 13 seconds C, 12 seconds D, 11 seconds or less. All right. You know, sometimes I get a slow group. And sometimes I get a group that's half with it, and 11 or less, you get a what? You get an F, thank you. So, you know, I invested 2 minutes in building my test grade. This was my test grade. We go on the roof of the building, 15 seconds is an A. We have the whole class period. I take my test grade, my 2 minute investment, and it's in the air for about 8 seconds. What's my grade? Yeah, but we have the whole class. So I run down the steps, 3 stories. I grab my test grade from the lawn. And before I run up the steps, the 3 flights, I realized there was a computer lab on the first floor. What's in there? Oh, yeah, computer paper. I grab another test grade out of one of the printers, and I start making test grade number 2 as I go up the steps. So you can imagine, this one is nice. This one is not so nice. This time I don't stand near the ledge of the third store floor. I stand on the ledge because I need every second I can get. And now I'm thinking, like, should I curve the wings? I fly test grade number 1. It's in the air about 9 seconds. I fly the second death. It does this death spiral. And it's in the air for 10 seconds. I run back down. I still have what grade? Yeah, I grab my 2 test grades, I go back to the roof. No, I don't. What do? Before I go to the roof? Stop in the computer lab, and I empty out 2 printers worth of paper. Yes, because it's a waste of time to go up and down floors, yes? I get on the roof, I fly my first 2 test grades, I still have an F. I'm about to make test grade number 3, and I had this thought. My thought was, it takes a lot of time to fold a piece of paper. I don't know, but let's give it a shot. 9 seconds. 4 seconds. 11 seconds. I have 500 sheets of paper. I'm at about sheet number 100. I mean, people on campus are walking by like, what's going on in that building? And I'm standing on the ledge. Sheet number, it had to be 99, I think, probably 99. I let it go, and it starts going down, and then there's a gust of wind, and it goes above my head. And this is, I wish I wrote this down, but I hear this from the clouds, from the heavens. I hear, it's above my head! You know, and the clock is ticking. We get to 12 seconds, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 seconds. I put my hands up. A++++, yes? I mean, I'm Ralphie in the Christmas Story. I'm like, yeah, that was good. I get an A in the course, you know, not just on the little test grade. I ask the professor, because he's a consultant for Fortune 500 companies. If you think you know everything, what do you want to do for a living? Tell other people. Yes? So I asked my professor, he's a consultant, he only teaches 1 class, 2 classes now and then. I said, would you write me a letter of recommendation? I had a 4.0 at the end of my first year of school, mechanical engineering. Like, would you write? He says, sure, Mr. Fanning, I could do that. And he does. But he doesn't give it to me. He puts it in my file. I go and pick up the letter of recommendation from my file. It's a beautiful day, I think it was May. It's on his consulting letterhead. Good. Good stuff. It says, Jonathan Fanning has a lot of talent and does just enough to get by. Now, how many of you would go to the professor's office and say, thank you, I appreciate it. This is good stuff. How many of you would not? On a show of hands, how many of you would not? Some of you. How many of you are not going to raise your hand? Absolutely, no matter what I ask today. So I did not go to the professor's office. You understand this, right? Was I happy with him? Was I grateful for his perspective? Okay, honest question for you. Have you ever had somebody pop into your life and give you a message that you needed, but you didn't really want it? How many of you have you've had this happen? How many of you have had this happen and you didn't go thank the person when they told you this, what you needed to hear? I mean, I needed to hear that. I played college basketball. It was a little junior college. We were ranked number 3 in the country. It was all kids who could have been D1 but didn't have the SAT scores, except me. I had the SAT scores but couldn't play D1. I'm only 6'4". I'm little. I'm like Steph Curry, and I don't shoot quite the same. He told me something I needed to hear. He said, your work ethic relative to your talent, relative to the gifts that... He didn't say relative to what the gifts God has given you, but he did. He did. He said there's a gap, essentially. He said there's a gap between who you are and who you're capable of becoming. And I did not thank him that moment. I did not thank him that week. I wish I could say I went back to him before I transferred out of that school to say thanks. Took me a while. You think that professor understood me? You think he understood me maybe better than I understood me? You think there was some wisdom to this? You think there was some wisdom to even, like, he didn't tell me face to face. He certainly could have. It would have been easier for him to tell me face to face, yes? But I think he knew that I might just argue. I think he knew that I might blow him off. I think he knew if he told me face-to-face, I might say, yeah, but like, why? I'm playing baseball and basketball for college. My coaches don't think class is that important. And I got a 4-0. I think he knew. He knew not just the message I needed to hear, but he knew how to deliver it in a way that I might actually hear it. I get to speak all over the world now. And one of the things I do all the time is before I speak, whether it's in a church, whether it's to teenage kids, whether it's to McDonald's or Mars Chocolate or Mercedes-Benz or the U.S. Air Force, it doesn't matter who I'm speaking for. I pause before I speak and I pray. I'm like, God, help me to talk about what they need to hear, even if it's not exactly what I want to talk about today. Challenge for you this morning. I want you to pray this with me. Heavenly Father, help us today to hear what you want us to hear. Amen. It doesn't have to be that complicated, does it? I give you a challenge. Look for game changers. Early in my career, I went through GE's leadership program, right? GE's leadership program always is voted one of the best in the world. But most of us in that program, I mean, we were the top of our class from all kinds of places all over the world. And most of us in the program, most of the time, we're not looking for game changers for ourselves. We were looking for the next connection so we could move on in our careers. We were looking for the check in the box, finish the program, now you can. We were looking for the next assignment. We were looking for the career advance. We weren't looking for game changers for us. And my challenge to you is to pray, God, help me to see the game changers that you have in store for me today. Does he? Fast forward in my life a little bit. I'm consulting for some of the biggest companies in the world, and I'm traveling all over the place. On one of my trips, I'm driving from Pennsylvania to Detroit. I'm working for one of the big 3 car companies, helping them in their turnaround. And I'm driving towards Detroit. I'm driving through western Pennsylvania. You ever do one of those trips where you can't really fly? You ever been there where it's like these connecting flights, and you're like, it would take my whole weekend just to do the flight if everything went smoothly. So I would do these drives sometimes. My family lives in Northeast PA. And I'm driving back through western Pennsylvania, warm day, cold night. You ever been there? In North Carolina. No, most of you aren't from North Carolina, right? Most of you were kicked out of your state because you were a good person. Like we kick in New York, I live in New York. We kick all the good people out, we send them to Florida, then they move halfway back and they call them halfbacks, right? I think. Because they're like, well, Florida's hot. And I'm too nice, I'm too good a person to live in New York. So I'm doing this road trip, right? Warm day, cold night, black ice. Car starts sliding. Car hits the guardrail. Car spins into the middle of the highway, Interstate 80. Two tractor trailers obliterate my car. First one hits the back of the car, shatters my older brother's skull. My older brother Andy, a year and a half apart. How many of you have a sibling that you were close to at some point in your life? How many of you have a brother you were close to at some point in your life? So maybe you know this. My brother Andy and I, we used to beat the living tar out of each other as kids. You know, until he went off to college and he got a black belt in Taekwondo. You know, he's coming home, like, watching Van Damme movies, and he's got things hanging from trees in the yard, and he's got things hanging from the ceiling, and he's doing these kicks. You know, so we stopped, Joe. We stopped fighting at that point. You know, unless we were close enough, and I'm like, you like apples? How you like them apples? And then I would run. My brother Andy's in the backseat of the car, the first tractor trailer, when it hits, his head hits the pillar in between the front and back, and shatters his skull. Second tractor trailer, I watched it. I'm in the passenger seat. I watched it hit my door. When I regain consciousness, I'm panicked. I'm panicked, and I start kicking at the metal that's left. If you saw the pictures of the car, you think no one survived. I'm panicked. I'm kicking at the metal that's left of the door. I'm able to get out of the car, and I stand there trembling next to the car. You know, the next couple days, I couldn't stand up or walk, but in the moment, the cortisol, the adrenaline. I'm standing next to the car. I look through the back window, and Andy's unconscious, and there's a pool of blood, and I'm like, Andy. Like, what do you do? Do you move him? Because he's curled up. I can't tell if he could breathe. I can't tell if he's... I don't get to decide anything. Because I see out of the corner of my eye that my car is still sitting in the left lane of the highway. Concrete barriers on both sides of the road. It went back and forth like a hockey puck. Took chunks out of some of the guardrails. And we stopped in the left lane. And I'm standing next to the car. And I see that there's traffic coming at me at 70 miles an hour. I look and I think, like, get out, get away. It's going to hit you. I start running towards the shoulder. Concrete guardrail. I played basketball in college. I had a 40-inch vertical leap. I could jump a 3-foot concrete guardrail pretty easily. I'm about to just leap the thing. You know, it's a little high. It's maybe a little less than the podium. I'm about to just leap the thing. And I have this little thought, don't. I can't see what's on the other side. I grab the guardrail instead of jumping. I grab it and swing my legs over. And my feet touch nothing. I'm on a bridge in Clarion, Pennsylvania, mile marker 58 on Interstate 80. I'm hanging on a bridge that's 106 feet from my feet to the ground, 106 feet. No nice river, no nice splash. They probably wouldn't have found me that day. And I'm clinging to this guardrail. The traffic finally stops. I pull myself over and I just collapse. Every now and then, God gives us wake-up calls, doesn't he? I don't tell this story because, like, Jonathan, wow, that's what... I tell this story partly because you've been through it, haven't you? Somewhere in your life, you've had some things, like, where you're like, that was too close. You know, maybe it's a close friend, maybe it's a close family. Right, you've had this. And I started, after that accident, to pursue a different set of questions. I was successful. Everybody was like, Jonathan, wow, you got an office in the world headquarters of that company. You're helping all Fortune 100 companies, flying on corporate jets all over the place. They're like, Jonathan, you're doing well. And inside, I'm like, no, I'm not. Because something was missing. I had no clue what it was. But after that accident, I started slowly to ask a different set of questions. One of them was this, Jonathan, what kind of person are you becoming? You know, you're working with CEOs of companies. You get to sit down with Bill Ford, whose great-grandfather started the company, Henry, you know. You get to sit down with these kind of people and help them with strategy and help them with coaching and help them with leadership. But Jonathan, like, you're not that patient. And you don't, like, you talk to people and you give them some guidance, but you don't actually care about some of them. And I'm in hospitals for a little while as we're going through recovery, and I'm thinking, like, I need to change a couple things. How many of you, like, at some point in your life, God has whispered in your ear, you need to change a few things? How many of you, at some point in your life, God hit you over the head with the frying pan and said, like, come on, we've had the conversation before? You know, and this was this. I joke that Robert Frost wrote me a letter once. I mean, I was not born yet when he wrote it. But he wrote this. He said, how many things have to happen to you before something occurs to you. And that was this accident. And I started saying, Jonathan, you got to change some things. And I said, like, you're heading this way. You got to change the way you treat people. You got to change the way you spend your time, your calendar, right? Your calendar, your checkbook, they're spiritual documents. They describe exactly precisely who and what you worship. I didn't use that language then. But I said, something's wrong. I got to change some stuff. My older brother Andy, he recovered. You know, they had to do a lot of work. They airlifted him to Pittsburgh to work on his brain and his skull. But he recovered. I mean, he helped design the latest BMW M5 transmission, the Corvette C6 transmission. He designs high-performance transmissions in the auto industry. His brain's working okay. Now, we don't tell him that. But I started asking this question, Jonathan, what kind of person are you becoming? You know, and I needed a simple plan to become a better person. I thought back through my time in GE and I thought back through all these experiences, and I started thinking, like, I need a simple plan that actually works. And I realized that I needed to pick one thing and find simple ways to practice it. For example, after the accident, right, my brother survives, and you know who we thanked in the healthcare world? You know how many people we thanked? Two surgeons and two nurses. How many people were involved in keeping my brother alive and saving his life? How many people do you think? Hundreds, yes. I mean, the helicopter crew, the ambulance crew, the maintenance teams and the finance teams and the administration teams behind all these systems, yes. I mean, I started asking people, be honest, do you feel like you get too much appreciation from the people around you in life? Honest question. How many of you feel like people in your life, they let you know how much they appreciate you too much? Like, you're like, please stop. I know. Father, you're just such a, I don't know how to say this, but you're such a wonderful father, right? You know, husband, honey, you're so, how many of you feel like you get way too much appreciation? You know, and I started thinking, I thought, you know what I could do? Once a week, simple thing, right? I needed a simple process to become. And I said, you know what? Once a week, I could write down one person's name. How many of you, I mean, if you're brutally honest, if you just once a week, maybe you do it Sunday during Mass. You're like, God, help me to notice, help me to think about just one person that I could let them know they matter. Help me, like, give me a person that I could appreciate this week. I could pause and I could let them know. How many of you, I mean, we pray that for 5 seconds. Let's try it. Father, help me see one person. Close your eyes for 5 seconds. I bet almost every one of you has one, right? Yeah. You know, for me, when I was 12 years old, I played Little League Baseball. I had a coach that was like, hey, don't ever strike out looking. Little League All-Star Baseball team. He said, don't ever strike out looking. And I said, well, come on. Like, I see major leaguers do it all the time. He said, when you're making $1 million playing baseball, let's come back and like, let's have the conversation again. He said, don't fail for lack of you. He said, don't go home from practice clean ever. He said, if you go home from practice and you're not absolutely, you can't prove to anyone that you actually practiced today. How many of you have at least one person in your life? They gave you a gift like that. And maybe it was last year. Maybe it was 30 years ago. You have people in your life. I have people in my life that if you once a week, you sit down and say, help me find one person to let them know they mattered. Help me find one person. You realize like how big of a game changer that would be. Oh, I mean, please, Father, help us just see a glimpse. Just see a glimpse of the ripple effect if we were to do that. First 300 years of the church, they changed the world. The next 1,700 years of the church, we've been sort of on maintenance mode. Yeah? I mean, these people, they completely live differently than everybody else. Peter even wrote it. He said, like, always just be ready. 1 Peter 3:15, he's like, always just be ready. When people ask you for a reason for the hope you have, be ready to give them an answer. In other words, people are going to ask you, how come you're such a different man? How come you're such a different father? How come you're such a how come the way you run your business is so different? Help me understand that. Help me understand the courage you have and the patience you have and the conviction you have. Help me understand this. That's what Peter was saying. He's saying people are going to ask you. For 300 years they asked. For 300 years they asked, and the church exploded and altered the course of all of humanity. I picked a pillar of listen to people. I said, Jonathan, like once a week I'm going to practice listening to somebody. And then I changed it to once a day. I said, once a day I'll practice listening to somebody. Never forget, I was flying to Des Moines, Iowa. I had a keynote in Des Moines, Iowa. I got to share the stage with Jim Kelly. You know him? I said, you know, Jim's lost 4 Super Bowls. I have never lost a Super Bowl. Jim didn't really laugh. He said, you want me to throw a football to you? But on the flight, it was an hour and 17-minute connection. I'll never forget it. An hour and 17-minute connection from Chicago to Des Moines, Iowa. You know, you can't get there from here. You can't fly to Iowa from anywhere except Chicago. So I'm on this hour and 17-minute connection, and I know it exactly, precisely, because I sit down and I thought, like, I'm going to practice listening. Whoever sits next to me on the plane today, I'm going to listen to them like I'm going to be a 10 out of 10 at listening, like authentically listening, like really genuine. You ever been there? How many of you, listening is not your best suit? You're actually better at nodding people on. Some of you have been doing it for about 20 minutes now. But I, you know, I'm like, I'm going to listen. Whoever sits next to me, I'm going to listen to them. I'm going to just like enter their world and talk to them and listen. I sit down, and you know who comes down the center aisle? A woman who is talking to herself. Have you ever talked to a talker for a while? Yeah, like my wife's like, they should have an on and on and on and on anonymous. Like, you know, because you need help. You know, she's walking down the aisle, she's talking to herself, and she says, is this seat number whatever? And I'm like, no. I didn't say that because I was committed. I'm going to practice listening to whoever sits next to me. She says, it is. Wow. She says, where are you heading? And I'm like, but she doesn't need me to answer her. You know this, right? She's just talking. 0 to 10, I love to like say, I'm going to work on this and let me give myself a score, 0 to 10. 0 to 10, the first 30 seconds interaction with this woman was like a -4. I'm like, I'm going to take out my Kindle. I'm going to take out a book. I got some emails to do. I'm finishing writing a book. I'm like, I got stuff to do. I'll practice listening to the flight attendant. That seems like an easier thing to practice with. I'm like, no. Reset. Why do we have confession? I think that might be a big part of it. We all need a reset, don't we? We all need a reset. But we tend to want to look for the easy, don't we? I was in Assisi once. I'm in Assisi, and I heard that, like, if you make confession there, you're good. And they speak Italian. So I thought, I'm in. Bless me, Father. You don't understand this, right? Good. Let me tell you the stuff that I haven't told anyone. Right? How many of you, like, if you actually think about it, there are a few things you're like, I hope the priest doesn't know who I am. I'll make that confession somewhere else. I love the quiet laughter. It's like, see, I mean, you start praying for God to show you the things you need, not necessarily the things you want. Watch out. You know, I'm like, listen to this woman. Okay, all right, start over. I'm a -4, start over. How's it going? How's your trip going? And I listened for 30 seconds. I was a 10. I was like a 10. I mean, I was a Ralphie. I was A++. I was a 10 for 30 seconds. And then I'm like, and he said, great-grandchildren, huh? And I'm like, you're a 0 again, Jonathan. Start over. See, most of us, we need game changers, yes? But we don't need a complicated game changer. We need a simple one. I mean, we need something, I think, most of the time so simple and so practical. Maybe it's this. Maybe you go to Mass and you think, God, help me to see in this reading, in the gospel this Sunday. Help me to see something that I really need to notice. Whew. You do that once a week. Maybe you jot down a note about it. Game changer. God will give you. He will hand you a game changer regularly. But not a random one. The one he's thinking like, there's a gap. We all know there's a gap. But he's like, here's the biggest shift in the gap for you. Here's the biggest, you do something right here. You have no idea. And I think this is kind of God's conversation. I think every great parent, right, I think in the back of your head we have these conversations. If my daughter would only see this one thing, I think God's like, he's like, if you just, there's something in the song this Sunday I want you to hear. And we're like, all right, I got to go. You know, you say that little prayer, God, help me to notice. Give me the one thing I need to notice. It's that sentence. It's who are you looking for or what are you looking for? Are you looking for your plan or God's? Your plan or God's? I didn't want this to happen, but my mother, somewhere in my journey, my mother says, honey, are you in town this weekend? Because I was all over. I was flying a lot. She says, are you in town this weekend? I said, yeah, I actually am. She says, you got to see this guy speak. There's a speaker coming, you know, to our area. And he's an author. He speaks for companies. He's just like you. I said, oh, what's he talking about? She says, I don't know. How many of you enjoy praying for other people more than praying for yourself? Like, you pray for what they need to hear. I'm like, God help my mother. I said, well, where's the talk? She says, it's at our church. And this is where I was at the time. I said, well, he's not like me then, because I would never speak in a church. And she says, no, you got to come. So I come and I sit where? Where do you sit if you don't want to be there? I was in the back left corner. Not this corner. I was closer to the door over here because I scoped out where the guards were. You know, where can I sneak out and not have anybody stop me? And I'm like right by that exit. And the guy's talking. And he talks about that there's genius in Catholicism. And I'm like, I don't know. But some of what he says rings true. And I go see him speak again. And the second time I go see him speak in Bronxville, New York. I was traveling for work all over the place. And I looked the guy up. I'm like, oh, wow, he's written a bunch of books. I go to the second talk and I sit in the back again. And at the end, he's got books. And I go and I buy a book and I said, can we keep in touch? Because he does consulting for big companies. And I'm like, maybe we could partner. I mean, this is where I was. He says, yeah, sure. He gives me his card. He says, Jonathan? I'm like, yeah. He says, if I give you a book, you promise me you'll read it and let me know what you think. He says, I'll write my cell down on my card. Give me a call when you're done and let me know what you think. I'm looking at his book table. He's got a bunch of business books. Then he's got some church books. And some relationship books. And I'm like, I'm thinking I get to pick the book. He reaches under the table. He pulls out this book called Rediscovering Catholicism. Big book. His name is Matthew something. Kelly, maybe. Hands me this big book. And I look at the cover. It's a picture of the Vatican. And I'm like, no, I didn't sign up for this. But you see, God, he knows you better than my professor knew me. Yeah? He knows exactly what you need, and he knows the way to deliver the message. I signed up for it. I'm like, yeah, I'll read it, and I'll let you know what I think. I take the book, and I'm thinking I'll do what I do in the corporate world. I'll skim it. I'll find four things to quote in different places so it doesn't seem like I only read the first chapter. I start reading the book, and it messes with me. It messes with me, and I'm thinking, like, where do you read a book like this? I should read it in a church. Like, well, there's a lot of those. I could find one. I start ducking into the back of a church near my house. It was Piermont, New York, right on the Hudson River. I start ducking into the back of the church, and I'm reading the book, and it was empty. I didn't know it was open outside of hours, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sneaking in and hiding in the back row by myself reading the book. Every now and then somebody would pop in and I would close the book real quick because I was convinced you're not supposed to read during, like, in church. Like, close the book. I'm like, I'm praying, I guess. You know, at one point in the book, Matthew says, we need silence. We need silence. Our souls yearn for silence. And I'm like, yeah, that makes some sense. And he says, in the silence, you'll find yourself. And in the silence, you'll find your God. And these will be the two greatest discoveries of your lifetime. In the silence, you'll find yourself and your God. And I remember reading that and thinking, like, I don't have either. I don't have either. I don't have either. Like, I'm successful, but I'm miserable. This car accident made me wake up and start asking different questions, but I had no idea where to go or what to do. I knew who I become is more important than all the other stuff. I knew that. I was starting to get that, starting to try to live that. But one of the pillars I picked was clarity, and I had none. Finally, I call Matthew. I'm like, I read the book. He's like, what'd you think? I said, yeah, it was okay. It was pretty good. He's like, this guy needs help, you know? He says, Jonathan, we're experimenting with this program. We're going to give out some of that book at Christmas. You know, he says, from a marketing perspective, you probably appreciate this, Jonathan, as a business guy. He says, we're going to give out about, I don't know, a couple thousand copies of that book at some churches around the country for free. He said, you think your church would want to do it? I said, probably. I can give you their number. He says, why don't you talk to the pastor? I said, I didn't say I don't know his name, but I thought I could probably do that. So I go and I find Monsignor Mulligan. And he says, oh, wow, I like that idea. You know, that sounds great. Why don't you come to parish council and talk about it? Like, no, why don't you, you know? Why don't I give you Matthew's number? You can call him. He invites me to parish council, and he puts me on first on the agenda. Like, this is wrong. I start talking about the book, and I'm like, I'm done. My time is up, and apparently they don't have the same schedule that... They had questions. One of the deacons says, does it have the imprimatur? And I said, oh, yeah. Like, I don't... You know, I later elbowed the woman that was keeping notes. I'm like, what did he ask? What was the question? Can you write the word down? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Then Monsignor Mulligan says, Jonathan, we're going to do it. He says, you know, if you do a book, like you said, you do it in company sometimes. You'll pick a leadership book. He says, do you do a book discussion usually? I said, yeah, otherwise usually it's sort of almost a waste, you know, like, yeah. He said, how long? I said, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. You can usually make it much longer, but people will sign up for four or so. He says, great. He said, you'd probably be the best person to facilitate that. I'm like, good Lord, what did I sign up for? Help, I want out. Oh. See, one of the pillars I picked was this. I picked this pillar of courage. I said, I'll practice courage. Now, see, it's amazing in this world. If you pick a pillar that you're going to intentionally build into your life, if you pick one, and then you chase it for any even reasonable amount of time, you will find simple ways to build it into your life. I'll give you an example. I'm flying all over the place. I'm speaking all over the place. And I'm flying back from some trip, and I'm thinking, like, my daughter, Ella, was only 5 at the time. I thought, if my daughter's only learned one lesson from growing up in my house, what would I like it to be? And I had this thought, well, I'd like them to have some guts, because our culture teaches the opposite for the most part. Our culture teaches the opposite of courage for the most part, yes? Our culture teaches go along. And I thought, I'd like them to have courage. I said, that's the pillar. I'd love to build that pillar into their lives. I'm flying home from this trip. It's a Friday night. And I thought, I'm going to do Brave and Daring Day with Ella. She's 5. I tell Ella the next morning at breakfast, I'm like, Ella, we're going to do Brave and Daring Day. She's like, yeah. What does that mean? And I didn't really have a plan. I was just like, we're going to do stuff that you have to have courage to do. I said, Ella, we're going to do stuff where you have to be brave and daring to do. And Ella looks at me and she says, like, climbed the thing at the playground that mommy won't let me climb? You know, and I'm like, I'm thinking, this is a two-for-one pillar. Practice courage and deceit. Like, well, we won't tell mama. And Ella looks at me, it's like she can read my mind. She says, we don't have to tell mommy. Like, okay. Well, we go to the playground, and it's not part of the playground. It's like a truss, you know. It's like it's like this wooden thing built near a tree, and it's not designed to be climbed. It doesn't have any climbing stuff. You know, it's got this lattice above it, and there's a tree, a little tiny tree next to it that's really, I mean, barely a tree. And my daughter, Ella, goes over to it, and she starts climbing on it, and it's swinging back and forth, and she's, like, bumping the wooden, and she gets up there, and it's probably 15 feet high. She's 5. You know, and I'm watching this going, like, this is brave and daring day. Okay. The other parents are looking at me. How many of you can appreciate that? The other parents are like, he shouldn't be doing that. We're supposed to be teaching our children cowardice. We're doing a really good job of it. He's not. My daughter gets on the top of this thing and she is beaming. I mean, she's like, and I take a picture. And I'm like, this is a good start. I take a picture. As soon as I take the picture, this boy comes running over to me. He's probably 8 years old. He comes running over. He bumps into me. And he says, did you help her? How did she get up there? Can I go up there? Can you put me up there? And I'm looking at him. I'm like, who are you? And I'm thinking, like, climb the tree. You, like, climb the tree, boy. And he looks at me, and he's like, he's so excited, right? Because God put in us a homing device connected to our potential and lasting happiness. I think they're interconnected. Yeah? A connection between our potential and lasting happiness. This kid's like, I'm going to do it. And I didn't answer him. I was about to. I was about to say, go. I didn't get to because his mother came over. You ever see a duck land on a pond? She came over like that, full speed, chips, wood chips are flying, and she puts her feet down, and they're skimming the pond, you know, wah! And she scoops up her young 8-year-old boy, like, in her feathery arm, and she petted him, and she feeded him, and she named him George. And she told him about the rabbits. No, and she reminded her young man that he was afraid of heights. Which was a blessing, right? Because he had forgotten. She reminded him that they were practicing the pillar of don't do anything that might have fear involved. Now, did she pick that pillar? Did she intentionally say, I want to make sure my son grows up and he's scared of the world? You think she picked that? No. See, part of the lesson here is that if you don't pick pillars on purpose, if you don't pick pillars on purpose, and if you don't drive those pillars into your life on purpose, you tend to get what people around you have given you. Yes? You tend to get what people around you have given you. In the world of courage, my daughter started loving this. She started loving this. She started doing it every Thursday. It was Try Something Thursday at dinner. It was my wife's idea. We came home one day. We were doing Brave and Daring Day. We'd do it just randomly. We come home one day, and my wife Dominica, she says, Brave and Daring Day with Daddy, huh? And Ella goes, yeah. And my wife says, what would that mean at dinner time? I think Ella was 7 at the time. Ella says, I'd have to try food I don't usually try. And Ella started officially Try Something Thursday. Her best friend in the world, Ava, wouldn't come to our house on Thursday for probably 5 years. I mean, it was like, you know, once in a while she'd show up, she'd get to the door, and I would have the smile on my face. I'm like, Ava. And she'd go, oh, I have to go. Finally, she shows up, you know, practice courage. God, give me a glimpse of what you want me to do that will take some courage in my life. This past Sunday's gospel, I'm listening. I read it a couple times, usually before Sunday. And I'm praying. I'm like, God, what's the lesson for me in there? What's the lesson for me in there? You know, you remember the gospel is this woman at a well, right? Jesus goes, he's talking to her for a while. You know what she did after their little conversation? She left her water jug and she went to the town And talk about courage with a ripple effect. See, moments of courage have a ripple effect. Moments of courage have a ripple effect. One moment of courage in your life, massive ripple effect. She walks away. She leaves her water jug there. She walks away and she goes to the town and she tells more people about God that afternoon than most of us have in our entire lives. And I'm like, I got some work to do. I've got some work to do. Yes? How many of you, not you, but you know someone else who has some work to do? I mean, she had the guts. She didn't say, I need to read 3 more books and then I could tell someone. She didn't say, well, in the theology of the body, she didn't give her a lecture. She said, he showed me where I was messed up and he loved me anyway. I think there's God involved here somehow. She didn't go to the town and say, let me, we should go to a retreat together. She said, like, God is messing in my life in a good way. I think that's about all she said. Maybe more. I don't know. But the amazing thing there is she had the guts, she had the courage to go and plant a seed that might help other people get closer to God. Whew. Wow. What happens with our church when a tiny, tiny group of people do that? When just this tiny little group of people have the courage to say, there's something I... And I can't explain it all. But it's messing with me in a good way. You know, one of my books is called I Once Was Lost. It's called I Once Was Lost. I speak in the corporate world a lot. People are like, that looks like an interesting book. Is it a true story or what is it? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, because I didn't write it. I started sitting on a bench near my church and going, God, what's the next, like, what do you want me to write about? And he's like, write about somebody who's lost. And they think they're happy, but they're not. What if you and I, every single Sunday, took a minute and said, God, is there a seed somewhere in this mass that has the potential to be a game changer, maybe for me, maybe for somebody I know? Is there a seed in this mass somewhere that has the potential to be a game changer for somebody in my world? And if there is, like, help me see it, and then help me have the courage to go and share it with somebody. I'll end with this thought. Weeks ago, I was asked to speak at the hardest keynote I've ever given in my life. It was a gala for a foundation. Candy and Jonathan, they lost their son Brandon when he was 20 years old. The gala was a big black tie event in Baltimore, and they asked me to come and talk for a few minutes. It was Jonathan's 27th birthday. Well, it would have been his 20. They said it was his 27th birthday in heaven. They said, we want people to know that you can take something that's just heart-wrenching and do something good with it. And they started this foundation where they help people who have lost a kid unexpectedly. And they said, it's like, this is Candy's word. She says, God shows us people, like, every day we meet people who have lost somebody. And I'm trying to get ready for this talk, and I'm like, what do I? I'm like, God, I don't know what to say. I have 2 daughters. Like, I don't really... Like, God, I don't want to know what to say. And as I'm getting ready for this, I had to go rent a tuxedo, and I go to the tuxedo shop, and tuxedo shop owner says, oh, just one? Yeah, I'm just going to this thing. And he says, what's the event? You know, and he's used to a lot, you know, wedding, whatever. And I said, I'm speaking at an event. He says, oh, you're a speaker? He says, you seem sort of quiet and reserved. And I'm like, I said, this is an event I don't know. I don't know, you know. I really, I always say, God, help me to say what you want me to say. But I'm like, I don't know. Because it's, and I explained it. And he looks at me, and he was the happiest. He looks at me, and his face just falls. And he says, Jonathan, my sister lost her child a couple days ago. And he said, and today my triplets turned 21. And I don't know. Am I supposed to celebrate, or am I supposed to, I don't know. And I said, oh, wow. He said, you're doing something good and important. I'm like, yeah, I hope God gives me something to say. I'm driving down to Baltimore. This guy, Tony's his name, the owner of the tuxedo shop. He sends me a message. He finds me on LinkedIn, sends me a message. He said, Jonathan, I went on your YouTube channel. I watched a whole bunch of your videos. He said, but one of them bothered me. It was about greatness, this video about greatness. It was really stealing from Pope Benedict, who said, you were made for greatness. The world promises you comfort, but you were not made for comfort. You were made for greatness. It goes hand in hand with Siki Dio Valeva, Ke Tu Fossi, and Chandrai Omondo. Catherine of Siena said, be who God meant you to be. Be who God meant you to be. Be who God meant you to be, and you will set the world on fire. Catherine bothers me, St. Catherine, because what she's saying is if you're not affecting people in a deep way around you, you got to get closer to who God meant you to be. This guy writes me, he says, I don't feel like I've done anything great in my life. I feel like my life is not greatness. And I'm like, I'm kneeling, I stop at a rest stop on my way down to Baltimore, and I'm like, God, I don't know, what do I write back to Tony? Now I got two problems, God, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know Tony very well. I'm kneeling at a Chick-fil-A. Like, I'm eating, and I write back to Tony, and I didn't write it. Like, you know, I'm like, God, what do you, have the courage to just listen, Jonathan. I write back to Tony, I said, there was a woman in France who wanted to do great things, but she was afraid that she wasn't going to get to do great things. And I said, and God whispered to her, Therese, do small things with great love. Not every flower is meant to be a rose. There are some little flowers. Do small things with great love, and that's greatness. And I said, and she died young, and she never felt like she did great things, but she wrote about it a little bit. And then a woman named Mother Teresa, who wasn't Mother Teresa at the time, read that little book and said, small things with great love. I like small things with great love. I could do small things with great love. And she took that little thing, that little moment of courage that St. Therese had of do some small things with great love. When you're with somebody, be with them. When you're listening, listen. And when you get off, you mess up, reset. When God's like, hey, have the courage to ask this person that question, ask him the question. When he's like, have the courage to invite somebody because we're going to do this event next year maybe. We're going to do this event next year maybe. And you got three people that should have been here, yeah. You got three people. I guarantee you, you've got three people. Like, if you don't, say, God, help me to see three people that you want me to invite to this thing next time. And I wrote this to this guy, Tony. I said, this woman... She said, I'll do small things with great love. I said, Tony, that's exactly what you did when I came in here to your shop. You greatness, maybe we've messed up the definition. And Tony writes back. He says, I don't know how to say this, but I'm weeping, and I needed to hear that. And I went to a college named Siena College, and I remember reading about this woman named Catherine. And he writes this back to me in LinkedIn. I didn't know anything about his background. And he writes back to me, Siki Dio Valeva, Ke Tu Fossi, and Chandrai Omondo. Be who God meant you to be, and you will set the world on fire. God bless you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you.
You've been listening to a special presentation from the Carolina Catholic Radio Network and the Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas. Tune in again next Saturday at this same time for another special presentation from the Carolina Catholic Radio Network and Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas on Carolina Catholic Radio Charlotte 1270 AM and streaming at carolinacatholicmedia.org and on the Carolina Catholic Media app.